This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Mr. Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks, man. How are you? I know how you are, actually.
I mean, I'm good. I'm extremely good.
Extremely I know good. You are, because it happened. It finally happened.
It happened. It all happened.
Someone completed the Okwonga dream.
One of the greatest red cards of all time. Dare I say, a wholesome red.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. A couple of bits of admin. Musa and Florence will be on Wright's house tomorrow. You're going to do like proper FA Cup stuff. We're going to talk about some FA Cup today, yes. But you guys are going to go in on it a little bit more. And go check Counterpressed. Also, schedule change. No Stadio Thursday. We're going to take Thursday off and then we'll be back on Monday. Slightly quieter schedule over the next 2 weeks. But yeah, that's all the admin. So today, like I mentioned, we're going to do some FA Cup stuff. We'll shout out some Bundesliga stuff. Can I also just shout out Casey Stoney and San Diego Way for winning the NWSL Challenge Cup?
You absolutely can. You absolutely
Alex
can.
Morgan, late winner.
Look at the veins.
You couldn't join it up any better. Could you? Shouts to Casey Stoney and San Diego Wave. I have fond memories of us doing the NWSL Challenge Cup in COVID.
Oh, listen, those are great times. The Bina just like spicing it up. That was quality.
Shout out the NWSL Challenge Cup glare
no
and
doubt.
The playground in the corner. Do you remember?
That was an absolute yes.
Oh, incredible time.
Absolute vibe.
The OG Challenge Cup will long live in memory.
It was so good, man. It was so good.
It was so good. I mean, when you could see it because of that bloody glare on the camera. Oh, and the memes, peak Twitter, great so memes. Great times. Anyway, shouts to San Diego Wave. But there was some good NWSL stuff as well, and also some WSL stuff. Yeah. I was simultaneously very fortunate and unfortunate to be at Stamford Bridge on Friday night.
Yeah, wow. Chelsea
which,
brought it.
Yeah, but you can check the Righty's House episode that was recorded from Stamford Bridge, if you haven't checked that already, with Mioa, Badumo, and Flo, and of course Ian. But yeah, Flo and the gang on Counterpress will do some NWSL and some WSL stuff, so go check that. I reckon we get onto today's show.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
I was going to say the dream is over, Musa, but the dream is over only because it became a reality.
Yes, the journey's complete.
Amad Diallo with Musa Okwonga's dream sending off scenario.
Incredible.
After winning the game in a quite unbelievable game of football in the FA Cup quarterfinal between Manchester United and Liverpool. 4-3 in extra time, the very last minute of extra time, very last second of extra time, basically.
Yeah.
saw Erik ten Hag's side through to the semi-finals, in which they will face Coventry City. How are you? Because I imagine this was quite a lot.
Just basically rewatched it, not just to indulge, but just to fully gauge. You know, sometimes when a thing is happening, you need to step back and actually absorb it again, because it is, first of all, I don't know where this performance came from. And I don't think a lot of the players who produced it knew either. And that's not a judgment. It's simply because the history of this fixture, the run Liverpool are on, the quality they're playing with, the injuries that United had, the adjustments they had to make, last minute injuries to Johnny Evans, and Casemiro was injured. Wan-Bissaka had not, it was a post-match press conference. Erik ten Hag said that Wan-Bissaka had only had two training sessions in the last few weeks and hadn't played in 4 to 5 weeks. And then produces a performance good, like that. He was unbelievable. He was unbelievable.
Very smart from ten Hag to put him on the left-hand side, I thought.
Dude, we'll talk about some of the tactical stuff in terms of that, but the guts of this performance.
Considering that they spent long periods of the game where they didn't really do much and they were playing an unbelievable 4-0-6 formation at one point.
So open. Like, it was so open. You
get this, as this a neutral, game, this game at points was so bold. Entertaining.
It was bold. Yeah. You know, can I say this about Manchester United, right, and all of this? There have been performances, and when I saw the team sheet, I'm not trying to say this to sound like I was some kind of savant, because I wasn't. I didn't see this coming. But when I saw the team sheet, I thought, the absence of Casemiro, in a funny kind of way, it was injury, so don't get me wrong, you don't look at things like that and go, oh wow, look, he's out like for that reason. It's always a bad thing. When I saw the midfield, in a funny kind of way, I thought, at least Manchester United will not be inviting pressure. Because the temptation with a player like Casemiro, I know he is mobile, but he's less mobile than he was. The temptation with Casemiro in a team, you can have one person like that sitting and then everyone else just bombs on. But because there was no Casemiro, I thought, this is going to be so open. This is basically United going toe-to-toe. McTominay and Mainoo and Bruno means that whoever Liverpool have, they're going to be hounded all over the pitch. It was hand-to-hand. It was like this old school, like, martial arts movies where people are fighting in doorways, like, all through the town. Because Klopp at the end even said, he said, like...
That's such a great wow.
It's how it felt.
I appreciate that.
Because Klopp even said at the end, in the interview, great post-match interview, very humble, very classy. I was so impressed. He just said...
Yeah, he also gave one that wasn't so classy and humble, let's say.
Oh, okay. Because I was really impressed by one that he gave straight afterwards, where he basically said, United took a lot of risks. 1v1, leaving us 1v1. They did. They had... Just sort of, obviously, we'll recap the game, but the thing for me that I have to say, there are two things that summed up this match. The first thing was, I have to mention Scott McTominay as man of the match, in my opinion. The lungs on this man, the guts on this man, the bravery, the way he engaged, the passes he played, the switches, the intensity. This man maintained, at one point, they're tracking all the way back, and I think it was the final minute of extra time. I think after he'd even scored, after Ahmad had been sent off after the second yellow, and they're looking, and no one wants to dive in and get the free kick, and then you see the person screening is McTominay, and I thought, of course it was. Like, I cannot emphasize enough, and we have to give this man flowers. He's been criticized, I've criticized him in certain ways, we all bow to critiques. The way this man delivers, and the refusal to hide, he's unselfish as a Fede Valverde. He generally doesn't care. This guy would not care if he didn't score for 5 seasons. He will do whatever is required of him.
Dude, can you imagine, like, I was running back and I heard Harry Maguire saying, kill him.
In the derby. Valverde, yeah, he is as unselfish as Valverde.
Doesn't quite hit as hard, does it? When you say Harry Maguire instead of Sergio Ramos.
And so that's the first thing that summed up this game. And the second thing I must say, Garnacho in the second half, there was a free kick and he was lying down behind the wall. And here's the funny thing. Until I think Onana has a word with him, he was prepared to face the free kick with his actual face.
Ali, you got to do it the other way, mate.
But I think he was like, no, I'll take it all. I'll take it in the face. And I saw that and thought, that summed up the spirit that Manchester United brought to this game. And credit to them, because Liverpool, oh my God, like...
Liverpool were really good.
They were ferocious, man. How did you find it? How did you see it? Before we get into the goals and the to and fro.
I mean, just no specific preference as to who won. I mean, apart from maybe, I think I would have liked to have seen Liverpool go through purely from a selfish Arsenal fan point of view, because as many games as they can have as possible is great.
Yeah, Klopp mentioned that too, actually. Two games fewer, yeah.
But at this stage of the season, with play, you know, with teams like that, it is what it is. Yeah. But literally, apart from that, I was just like, I mean, I'm kind of open for anything, really. You know,
they were absolutely
goals,
hosed.
Red cards, like, you know, and talking about goals and red cards, like the FA Cup, this FA Cup quarterfinals was not brought to you by Emirates. It was brought to you by goals and red cards. And listen, the sooner they just stick us on those ribbons, absolutely, the better, because we're the true sponsors, the spiritual sponsors of the FA Cup. Can you imagine? Stadio, the spiritual partner of the FA Cup. I wonder if they could do that, because spiritual sponsorship doesn't require money. It's just vibes.
The audacity. Actually, we'd like to spiritually sponsor the FA Cup. Okay, what does that involve? So you want your names up there? And give us no money.
Yep. It's holistic, man. It's holistic. Let us do it.
Can you imagine how annoyed like the goal states would be? Like, what? Emirates is standing.
Sorry, can you imagine how quick that phone would hang up? Anyway, you can tell I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much as a neutral. It was very, very entertaining. Yep. I thought all of the quarterfinals were actually pretty fun to watch as neutrals. Mm. It's, you know, some great games, some great moments, some goals, some red cards. But in this game, I'm going to do a quick recap. So United's first goal, I think, was very quick thinking. Great quick thinking on the free kick just to play out to Rashford.
Yeah.
A lovely little bit of interplay down that left-hand side. And then save from Kelleher, and Scott McTominay comes
crashing
in.
Crashing the box.
Yeah. Cheeky little knee slide. Knee slides are on the agenda today. We're going to talk about them later because Fermin Lopez had a dreadful, an awful knee slide. At the Metropolitan.
He's an all-timer.
Endo, I thought he'd equalised for Liverpool.
Yes.
Salah was spiritually onside.
He was indeed.
But literally offside, so the goal didn't stand. And then
McAllister deflected.
Alexis
strike.
McAllister, yeah. I mean, that was coming, wasn't it?
Really? Kobbie Mainoo, very unfortunate. I mean, like, didn't do anything really wrong in the game. Put a foot out, deflected it into the corner. It was just unlucky. And a shame for Onana, because he'd been really good, and I thought he was really... I thought, actually, I saw in this game... I saw the Inter Onana in this game, actually. Some of the passing out from the back in the second half was absolutely spectacular. Through the gaps, playing through dangerous areas, and he looked confident, man. He looked confident.
I think he's looked good for a while.
He has actually. This was really, in terms of to do what he did in all of that chaos, I thought was really special. So then we had McAllister scoring on the stroke. Well, not the stroke of our time, it turned out. Salah scored on the stroke. So I thought it'd be like, go to the break at 1-1. Salah pops up, far post, rips in off the post with his right foot. And it hadn't had the best first half, actually. Hadn't had the best first half.
Did his best to put that wide.
He did, actually, yeah. He was not really locked in. And that's also credit to Bukayo Wan-Bissaka, who doubled as a winger.
That. He's got a name.
He doubled I know, because he doubled as a winger. That's what I'm saying that. Because he was...
All right, okay.
His quality... Clever. In wide... Well, thank you. His quality in wide areas was such that he pushed up so high, but he also never neglects his defence. That's what I love about Wan-Bissaka. Mm. Like, he does it all. Like, he won't just get lost. He'll never be a player that gets... stranded up front. And the lungs to get back, the positional sense, and he's just, you know, one of the best one-on-one defenders in the league. And this is the thing that often gets forgotten in the chaos, because he's been involved in some bad defeats for United, but he always tends to show up. And the fact that he barely trained before this game, incredible credit to him. So then you have a situation where, even though Salah hasn't had the best first half, he ends up being someone who's potentially decisive for Liverpool. And it was weird, because it goes to half time, and I can't lie to you, Ryan, I thought, and this is my inner pessimist, I thought, okay, 2-1 at halftime, Liverpool are going to go away. Yeah, they're going to go away with this. But the way United started the second half, I was like, hey, you know, actually, a lot was made of the fact that Darwin Nunez goes and slashes one wide. But what people weren't really talking about was that, just like, I think in a minute before, United have a cross shot. Because they're making ground. The only reason that counter is so open is because United have pushed all the way up. So from the start of the second half, United's mentality was, we're going to go for this. And to their credit, for the next hour, they never stopped going for it. I think that's why they prevailed.
It kind of felt like a bit of a free hit at that point.
It was.
A few United fans I spoke to, friends of mine, I think, weren't massively confident, let's say. And I think when that second goal goes in before half time, and it had been coming, actually.
Yes.
I think Liverpool were, I think Liverpool did have the better of the first half. Although United did have their moments for sure. But there was something weird about it. I think it felt like United had chances, but didn't really feel like they had the belief. I'm not sure if that's accurate. Just the kind of sense I got, because it felt like another Liverpool goal was never really too far away. You know, there were a lot of shots in this game. I think there were over 50 combined.
Yes, oh my God, it's wild. And United actually had more.
Yeah, United had 28, I think.
You know, it wasn't they didn't have belief, it's that they were very disjointed. So
that's better, yeah. That's more accurate. Yeah.
Rasmus Højlund had, I think he passed the ball 8 times. The amount of running that man did along the top of the front line, he always got there slightly late to the party because he basically was like having to press 1-2 people at a time. So it was like he was shaking the tree, but wasn't going to catch any of the fruits. So all the fun was being had by the players slightly behind him, like McTominay, Kobbie Mainoo, who was unbelievable. Kobbie Mainoo was the amount of fire.
He did this one thing in the first half,
dude,
where he was surrounded by, I think, 2 Liverpool players, maybe even 3 down by the near touchline. Like, there's no way. I was like, United are in trouble here because they're going to.
Dude, in the second half, he played out a gap.
And he kind of just wriggled out of it.
The dude played out from between, I think it was others, Elliot and Szoboszlai. I can't remember. The second half, this man played out from inside, like almost inside his own area, between 2 Liverpool players to start like another attack. And I just thought the confidence on that boy. Like, and the amount of times he would just come across and screen just when someone's about to play a pass, they just cut into gaps in the stuff that's not always on the stat sheet, but just the presence was spectacular. I thought he was unbelievable in this game. So United did get that second half.
And really good.
Very, very disjointed, but I say disjointed, but in a game like this, funny enough, the chaos worked in their favour because it's 2-1.
You got to embrace it.
They absolutely didn't. It's 2-1 and Klopp referred to missed opportunities. And I think the one that he might be mentioning the most is the Gakpo one. The 5-on-2 counter-attack.
Oh.
5-on-2 counter-attack. Gakpo's, you know, striding forward and looks up and almost has too many options. Chooses Elliot, not the worst option, but then Elliot plays a pass that Dallow cuts that out really, really well.
Yeah, I think Gakpo's original pass to Elliot wasn't the best either.
It wasn't.
It was actually quite similar to, actually, I was going to talk about this later, but just
the counter.
Garnacho's pass for Diallo wasn't amazing.
Dude,
actually,
it was not good.
Even better, but we'll talk about that.
We'll get to that.
But yeah, it's funny how, like, kind of reminded me, even though it was 5-on-1, I think, in that game, but do you remember when Liverpool had that break against Arsenal at Anfield?
Yes.
And it was just Declan Rice against everyone.
And, like Jon Snow on the hill.
pulling out his sword. Kind of funny how, I mean, you just wouldn't expect Liverpool to have 2 opportunities like that in a season and score from neither of them.
No, absolutely right. Absolutely. And the speed, can I say this as well? And this is, I've got to give Bruno credit for this. The man was not even in shot when that counterattack began. And who was the first person to come back who was not a defender? It was Bruno. Down in the, on Liverpool's right flank, in his left back spot, the man basically came back and was playing left back. It was unbelievable.
Can I admit something? When that happened, you know, like in cartoons when they kind of, when someone sees something and they have to rub their eyes and they do it again. Kind of to be like, is that... Bruno?
You know, when you watch players running on fumes, I never thought, if you'd said to me, Musa, just a few days after Inter Atleti, you're going to see players even more knackered, I said, no way. And somehow, McTominay was cramping. He was cramping. This is how much these players were charging about. Rasmus, I would be fascinated to see what the actual final kilometre count was for some of these players. I think Rasmus Højlund probably did more kilometres per touch. He probably ran more kilometres per touch than almost any player in the top flight this year in terms of just, like, I ran 10 kilometres and touched the ball twice or whatever. Like, so Bruno, I want to give him credit defensively for what he did. Diogo Dalot, I thought, was excellent in terms of screening. Maguire came on and did well. We'll get to Ahmad in terms of his overall performance, but can I just say this as well? Kept the ball superbly even before he scored. There are some things that guy did and you can consider the noise, the pressure, all of it, the intensity, all the things, and the journey he's been on, Sunderland, Atalanta, on loan here and there, to come in and take your moment and put yourself on people's radar. And goodness knows where his career goes for United at this point. But I was talking to my friend Paul, we were having a chat afterwards, after the game, and just the fact that he had this moment is so beautiful. We'll put a pin in that because we'll come back. But so then Liverpool don't score the counter and Anthony's come on by now. And this is a player who, frankly, has needed something, has needed a defining moment, to put it mildly. And the ball falls to him after Garnacho makes yet another sprint. Garnacho, and I said this in the chat, I think, Garnacho basically capable of flat-out sprints for 2 hours. I mean, goodness knows how he's doing that. But incredible effort from him. Garnacho pushes into the box, 2 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, falls to Anthony. And in, reminiscent of Makeda against Aston Villa, same kind of move, spins off his man, and with his wrong foot, bends it in the far corner, and then bedlam, total bedlam. And a moment that I think, in the context of this fixture, where Manchester United had been passive before, you know, got thrashed 7-0 at Anfield, you know, a scar that people don't talk about, but is always the undercurrent. The catharsis I saw after that second goal is unlike a lot that I've seen. In, I mean, it's talk about the new ownership and, like, you know, excitement, but my goodness.
Catharsis that we haven't seen until about 15 minutes later or whatever it was.
Yeah, right, right. Well, okay, look, so we get...
we'll touch on that.
So at this point, it's 2-2, and then Marcus Rashford, can I be honest, I genuinely feared for him.
Sorry, 22 minutes later.
Eriksen curves a gorgeous ball over the top. He's coming as a sub, obviously. Rashford brings it down super in front of the Stretford end. Perfect touch in front of Stretford end. Looks up and strokes it 6 inches beyond the far post. Not like an inch.
So close. I don't think it was a howler, this.
But you know, here's the problem. Okay, here's in the context of everything, his season, conversations about will he, won't he make the England squad, just scored against City in the derby, sees the moment, this is the time, and he missed that. And I was like, I feel, it's very rarely you feel vicariously like unsettled on behalf of someone, but I thought, I felt sick for this guy. I felt, because
I think a relaxed Rashford puts that away. It's just
if they lose that,
maybe touch on this with Ian on Wrighty's House, because I'd like to get his take on it. When you feel the importance of each chance as opposed to just being relaxed in those
moments. That was a career turning moment, you know. That sounds dramatic, but if Liverpool had won that game, that felt like a moment that you always look back to as. So anyway, it goes to that. That is literally the final kick of the game, normal time. And then we go into extra time. And at this point, I'm just like, this feels like something from the 1980s. This felt like some nostalgic throwback. Barry Davies. It became like, it felt like every year of this match, we went back in time to like an innocent moment. Elliot puts them ahead with another deflected strike. And I felt, again, really bad for this, because I thought this could be a game where you have scapegoats. The moment like Elliot scores, I'm leaping and going, no, deflection. Don't go after my boy for this. It's not an honest fault. But credit to Rashford. You talk about the composure. Rashford turned up with the composure in extra time with that finish. It was absolutely gorgeous. Side foot strike, bottom corner. And at 3-3, my mate Liverpool fan, we were in touch on like WhatsApp. And he was like, we're not winning this on penalties.
Even at 3-3?
He was like, we're not winning this on penalties. We have to win it in normal time. We have to. Like, I just don't. Which is weird, because they had Keller in goal, right? Who was unbelievable on penalties. It was so, I couldn't process. The only thing I could process was how well Amad Diallo was playing in extra time. And then he gets his moment. The counter comes. Garnacho sprints free yet again, you know, pegging it. And then Diallo, obviously, has just come on, is absolutely tearing up the outside. And here's the funny thing. He plays the pass on the counter into Diallo's feet. But this is a funny, this is going to sound like a bit of a weird reference, but the relative lack of quality on the pass, because he's still got a decent pass off, but not a great pass, I think actually helps Diallo get the angle. Because if the ball is ahead of Diallo, then Keller has better set. But because it's slightly behind him, he has to go further across. So if you see the goal, there's a goal that Lewandowski scored against Atleti, where the ball goes, same weekend, goal. The ball goes across Lewandowski's body. It's the first goal. It goes across his body so far that he has to cut back across. And I think this is the same. Because the ball's slightly behind Diallo, he has to go slightly wider. So when he gets the angle to slot it, Keller is drawn out by it. And if it, ironically, a better pass, I think, doesn't give Keller the angle. And I think, doesn't give Diallo the angle. And I think Keller saves it. That's my hot take. Where a bad pass is actually a good pass. Great finish.
Well, the only reason, the only reason I think the slightly under hit pass benefits Diallo eventually is because it kind of dangles the carrot a
this
little
is what
bit
I mean
Connor
that's
Bradley.
What I meant that's what I meant
for Connor Bradley. So basically Diallo does, it's Diallo's first touch, I think, that is the key thing here.
Yes,
Diallo's first touch is really, really good.
He gets it out, yeah,
but it's not even that he gets it out, the way that he delays showing Connor Bradley what he's going to do puts Connor Bradley on his heels a little bit. And you actually see a moment of hesitation from Bradley where he's like, I stay? Is this going to go back to Garnacho? And that buys him the space. It's really, really smart. And the finish is obviously great.
Bit of fan service. And it was actually like Robert Pirès style, actually, the hesitation.
Actually, yeah, that's not a bad shout. That's a good, I like that comp. Yeah.
Someone was saying-
Yeah, that was something Pirès was amazing.
I was watching, I don't know if it was Henri. Henri was saying, you don't need stepovers. He said, if you look at like, all you need is unbalancing and hesitation. And I think it was very much that. Like Diallo in... There were moments of the game where you could be like, that passage of play summed up everything this player is at their best. And I think Diallo was the one. Like in terms of the eye to spot the early counter, also to win the tackle. This is incredible, right? See, the start of this goal, Endo and Elliot are on the edge of the box, the United box. And Endo is actually closest to it and he's going to take it, but he like defers to Elliot, which he'll regret, I think, this morning. He defers. And in that moment, it was like it's a reference few will understand, but anyone who's been through like the Berlin airport, there's those doors going to customs, like the automatic doors. And it's like when those doors open, when they open up, it's like the path to freedom. And every time I come through customs, I'm like, ah, oh, I'm allowed to cross yet another border. And it's just that moment when the gap opens, the doors open, and Diallo sees daylight. He sees 80 yards of Old Trafford daylight, and he's just gone. 80 yards of daylight. That's like me looking into Berlin every time I return. And Diallo liked, and credit to him winning this challenge, because the ball bounces between Endo and Elliot, and it's there for like half a second. And he's onto it. Like, this is why this goal's so amazing, because he starts it and finishes it.
Mm.
So, you know, in terms of like...
Did he finish it.
My God. And
he put the cherry on the cake.
A bit of commentary about, not the best strike. No. That was precision. That was knowing that the keeper was...
Who cares, though? Actually, like, who cares? It went in.
But it wasn't like some bobbled... I've got to editorialize on this, because it wasn't some bobbled strike. There's a clean... finish, like the Harry Kane style. You don't have to leather it. It's just...
It's a great goal.
Gorgeous goal.
Great goal, great moment, great winner, and then...
Charges
the
to the corner flag.
Happens.
Takes off his shirt. He's already on a yellow.
Holds his name up.
There's a gorgeous shot, cuts to a young United fan who's like basically in tears of euphoria. Which
in a good way.
It's delightful, yeah. Joyful. He's in the corner.
Rumours that Diallo said that one's for Okwonga as he went down the tunnel.
Yeah, we got tweets about that, didn't we? Got tweets about that again.
We did. Doing Musa proud.
The dream red card. Gets a second yellow and awesome, as he goes off, gives a shirt to a fan.
Yeah.
Right near the tunnel.
Gets a standing ovation. It's like, I'm done.
Bless him, looked a bit sad. I think he was sort of tapping his head in the corridor, like, as in like, got to my head almost. And there's like a United official alongside him going, no, you did good. It's okay. Like reassuring him. He goes down the tunnel to be joined by all his teammates about 2 minutes later.
I mean, at the end of the day, all he's lost is that he doesn't have to go to the Brentford game.
Yeah. I just hope that's it, basically. Whatever happens in terms of his career now, I just hope he's taken. I hope he's given a bit more platform for his talents. Like, I don't know what his ceiling is at this point. I know he's a very, very good player, but it's so easy.
21, man.
It's so easy for players like that to get caught in the driftwood, though. It's so easy.
And this isn't a dig at Manchester United, but it feels like a lot of players who have come through United have looked,
dude,
like really good, and then just not ended up being.
If it can happen to Sancho, if Jadon Sancho can fall off that far, it can happen to anyone. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the ball game. Yeah. That was the ball game.
That was it. Manchester United will go through thanks to Ian Wright, who had arguably one of the greatest FA Cup draws of all time.
Absolutely hilarious.
The way he was like looking around and Roy Keane trying to keep a straight face.
Oh my God, yeah, he knew. Ian was quite literally in his bag. He was. There was a man.
He was. Looking at the camera and saying, shaking up the ball bag. It's like, sir, this is a Sunday afternoon.
Sir James. Suits you.
Outrageous. So Manchester United are going to play Coventry City.
I love that draw. I love that. Coventry with a winner, an equalising winner so late that the commentator actually said, there is the winning goal that breaks Coventry hearts when Wolves got their second.
Yes, this
is incredible. You know, in many ways, can I say actually, because I hope the commentator's not too hard on themselves for that, because actually that made it like even more pure FA Cup. That's what I love about it. Like the fact that it was so late that it was like, you know what, a reasonable view would be, yeah, that's it, it's done. I loved that actually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. 88th minute goal. You'd kind of, I mean, the thing was that there ended up being 100 minutes, well, 10 minutes of stoppage time. Ellis Sims to equalise in a night, was it 97th minute?
So 97, yeah, 90, yeah, 90 plus, Jesus.
90 plus 7, 97, 98, and then Hadji Wright with the winner.
Gorgeous, the gorgeous minute. Finish that as well. Yeah, the composure that time, bending in the corner, then running away to the Coventry fans up in the gods. Absolutely wild.
Mark Robbins gave it, was disrespectful, Gary O'Neill said. The disrespect of Mark Robbins to turn around and celebrate in front of the ball boy.
Can I say, that's the FA Cup, the magic of the cup. This was a great weekend for fan reactions, I have to say. It really was. The sadness for Wolves, actually, is that this would have been a really great exclamation mark on a quietly, really quite impressive season. And would have been a huge deal for them. Like, so it's absolutely gutting from a Wolves perspective. But obviously, you know, Coventry haven't come this far since 1987, I think, when they won the whole thing. So for them, it's just, we'll be talking more about it on Righty's House. But for them, hope your heads aren't too sore this morning. Hope you're hydrating. But what an incredible, incredible trip back that must have been for the away fans from Coventry.
Going to Wembley.
Yeah, from Wolverhampton back to Coventry. Incredible.
Chelsea are also going to Wembley. Beating Leicester City 4-2.
Yeah. You will not get two goals at a more opposite end of the spectrum than the De Sassi own goal and the Madueke clincher. Madueke's finish was, dude, straight banger.
Can an own goal go now for goal of the year?
Do you know what? Yes, it can. If you want a goal that epitomizes where Chelsea have been this last year, then that could be goal of the year. A goal that sums up your year, yeah.
Just at the wrong end.
Yeah, right, right. And then the Madueke goal in its own way as well was equally Chelsea, because we know they have extraordinary talent that they just have to harness. The quality is there. And I heard about some boos. Talking about the boos at the game. And I just, look, I don't watch Chelsea every week, so I don't want to speak out of turn too much to the fans that are watching every week. But I don't watch Chelsea and feel these players are mailing it in. Like, I do see effort in that team. I see people trying, but there's a problem with coordination. You can maybe look at the Wolves game where things were substandard. Don't get me wrong, it was substandard. But overall, there are just so many moving parts to that club. When things were in such disarray at executive level, I do find myself more reluctant to critique players. And maybe the boos were aimed at the overall structure, who knows? But it was a bit of a shame to hear about that. But yeah, a really good win for them actually in the end. They should have made hard work of it, but they got there in the end.
They did. Yeah. But it was, you know, we had more goals than we had red cards.
Man City, Newcastle, it has to be said. So they beat City and Newcastle 2-0. The most entertaining part of this game for me was actually pre-match when I bumped into a Newcastle fan on the stairs in my building, and he looked absolutely terrified.
Really?
Yeah, he was very afraid. And he was basically like, they're going to cook us. And I said, oh, no, like, you've got to go at them. Like, there's opportunities, but deep down, We both knew.
It's like when a kid goes to school for a new school for the first day, the parents are like, it'll be all right.
It'll be all right. It won't be frightening.
Loads of people join midterm. You'll be fine. Yeah. It's like, what shall they do? Actually, no, this is going to be bad.
The first corridor you walk down as a kid at a new school and it feels like a motorway. And you're like, oh my God.
I think that's what like words of encouragement going away to Man City is like, it's all right. Bernardo Silva's not even playing that well. You'll be fine. His face, actually, for the both the deflected goals, where he was just like, wow.
I'll take it.
Two deflected goals in the first half, and that was kind of it. It was pretty chill for Man City after that, I thought. Isaac had that one chance where I think he should have scored, that left foot volley.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Isaac out in the summer, because that man has delivered.
So that's the FA Cup semi-finals. Coventry, Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City. Quick shout out for the Premier League. West Ham drawing with Villa. West Ham had a winner disallowed for handball.
Mm, good late equaliser as well for Villa too.
In the six-pointer at Kenilworth Road, both teams left with a point.
Luton, my God. Listen, this for them to get this equaliser late, I don't know how much they recover from losing to Bournemouth and Forest in the same week. They were like 2 minutes from absolute disaster. Mm. So thank goodness they pulled that back for their sake, I think. And just Forest, just, you know, really disappointing not to close that out.
Yeah. Shout to Burnley though, who beat Brentford down to 10 men. Sergio Reguilón was sent off after 9 minutes. Jakob Brunlarsson put the penalty away, and then Fofana gave Burnley a cushion before Brentford got a goal back. But that's a massive win for Burnley.
Yeah, yeah. I can't see them being safe.
No, me neither. But final shouts to Fulham, who were brilliant against Spurs, winning 3-0. Two for Muniz, one for Lukic, and just a great performance from Fulham.
Great intensity, great drive, wit, technique, and also so confusing. I mean, Spurs are brilliant and also confusing. Like, you have a win like that.
I didn't think Spurs were bad, though.
No,
missed a couple of big chances.
No, but then still, you're losing 3-0 against Fulham just after a defining win against Villa. It's odd. It's odd.
I know.
It's odd. I mean, well, but then, you know, but it's not a judgment. It's more like
Premier League.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Do you know what? Maybe that's a fairer reflection. We've said this 1,000 times. You turn up slightly off, and the quality of the coaching and the players is such that if you're not quite on it, if you're not quite decisive enough, a game will run away from you. And maybe it's better to appraise it in that sense rather than to say Spurs were not their very best, which they weren't, but it's more a reflection on Fulham. And Fulham, who are just a very good side, and periodically will remind you of that.
Yeah, I mean, for Spurs, though, the annoying thing is that they, with Villa dropping points at West Ham, that would have, you know, a win for Spurs or even a point would have given them such an advantage for that Champions League spot.
Right.
I mean, it might go to five anyway. We don't know, but you don't want to kind of bank on that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I still think they're in with a chance, though. I don't think that top four race is over at all.
Dude, it's going. Well, the goal difference is like 1 point difference.
Yeah, they've got a game in hand.
There's one goal. Let's be honest. So much of this stuff is going on to the last day. Let's be real.
Yeah, it's impossible to call
it. Not that I'd want it to. I wouldn't want it to go down to the last day. Not me. No, no, no.
I mean, no. Not you. Of course not.
Not we won in last week's drama, yeah.
But yeah, congrats to Fulham.
Yeah, big congrats.
Great win there. Right, let's take a break and then we'll wrap up some of the stuff.
Let's do it.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
All right, man, should we go to La Liga quick?
Let's just do it. Let's do it.
Atleti nil, Barcelona 3 at the Metropolitano. A bit of narrative with João Felix.
Can I just say, like, Atleti must be infuriating at times.
Weird.
You put
team.
In a performance like that against Inter, and then defensive absenteeism in some of this game. Like,
dude, this is the thing that I've heard a lot from this week about people talking about Atleti in the Champions League against Dortmund, and they'll like shut up shop. But this isn't like 2014 Atleti.
It's not.
It's just not. Much more fluid attacking wise, way off it defensively, comparatively to those old sides. Mm. And you saw it, like Fermín López
that header,
winning a
room.
Header in the box, like against Witzel and Savic.
He had enough time to put up a step ladder to get that cross. The amount of room the man had in the box, I mean...
Dude, if he'd really wanted to, he could have taken a selfie of that goal.
It was so much space, he looked offside.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Seriously. Yeah. But yeah, this is what... You're right, man. This is what makes Atleti infuriating, because they can be so good. You know, they have such a great array of attacking options.
Mm.
And Griezmann's obviously in great form. But yeah, they basically just love the drama, actually.
They do.
If we're going to get real, like, they just...
Because it's like they don't get going until things are desperate. This is the thing I've noticed with them a few times of late. Look, even to the point where, this is the thing, one most damning criticism of Atleti is, I think they were trying to give Griezmann some time off.
Mm.
They're trying to rest him after the game he played at the weekend, in midweek against the Champions League. But they bring him on. They bring him on at half time because it's that desperate in terms of the lack of effort. So he gets shuffled into service. And actually, in terms of this game, so which ends 3-0 to Barcelona in Madrid, the opener from João Felix, he scores, really nicely worked goal, angles it into the far corner, and then he doesn't celebrate. But the reaction, oh my God. The sour mood.
I can't imagine him going back to Atleti.
To be honest, it was one of those situations where, and this is maybe my sort of, you know, woke soft heart speaking, but I genuinely felt sorry for him and quite a few Atleti fans, because this was meant to be, he was meant to be the spearhead of the new face of Atleti. It was all, this was the dream. We signed you for a huge amount of money. You're playing some gorgeous football for Benfica in the Europa League run, that deep run you go on. And you're the prince that was promised, and none of it worked out that way. And I just felt really sad for him, actually, because no one wants it to end up like that.
Dude, I wrote a piece for The Ringer ages ago about how it felt like João Felix was kind of reaching his final form.
Mm.
He was just like fresh faced, celebrating with his little brother playing for Benfica, who was a ball boy at the time. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then he goes to Atleti in this mega money move. And it's like, okay, how is this kind of, admittedly, what we thought was a little bit more of a, like a shy, quiet personality on the pitch, young guy coming through. He started to add some bite. And there was that period when, I think it was the title season, where he started to look like
the business.
Properly dangerous.
Yeah.
Because he had all of this technical ability and he was adding a load of bite. And you were like, this kid is going to dominate, actually.
Right. But here's the sad thing, right? I mean, the reason that Letty thing was always worried about that move, but he has still not scored more than 10 league goals since leaving Benfica in the season.
Wild.
Dude, this is the thing. It's
there, though.
But the thing that I was always afraid of is you are a player that would thrive in a ball dominant team, and you're going to one of the few teams in Europe.
Yeah, no touches. Yeah.
That is allergic to the concept of ball domination.
When he went there, I think ironically, he'd probably fit more into this team.
Now, my God, it worried me, that move, in terms of if he'd gone somewhere else at that point, and now he's 24, like, you know, it's not old, but it's not young.
Yeah, but years go quick in football, man.
They do.
Walcott's law, it comes for all.
João Felix, we should be talking about him as a top five.
Yeah.
we should be, like a Fernando Torres.
I think it's quite interesting when you can see like something happening in a player and you're like, this is only going to go one way. You know, like this feels a little bit different. You know, the Players' Championship was at the weekend, right, in the golf, and Scottie Scheffler won despite having like a mad neck injury, right? And it's people like saying, this is the first time they felt that way since Tiger.
Wow.
Like literally in terms of like how dominant you could be. Do you know what I mean? That feeling, you get that kind
of... That's amazing.
And I think with João Félix, there was this moment where you're just like,
this
is going to be top three in the... He's going to be a top three player in the world. It's not going to be... It's never... You know, there ain't no doubt in my mind about that. Like there's just not. And actually, it shows you how... I mean, we know this anyway. We're kind of... I don't know why we're... You know,
it's frightening how fickle it is.
We didn't need João Félix to kind of like to show us what we...
How quickly the football fates change. Yeah, we didn't need
that. But even with people like that, who... Even with players like that, where you're like, man, I can't see this guy's ceiling. Like it's going to be... He could literally dominate. And then to so quickly fall off, you know, being loaned to Chelsea, which I still think actually could have been a good move for him. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see like what his next move is, because I'm not entirely sure Barca can afford him. And Atleti really need to get rid. They're going to have to take a massive hit on his transfer, because they're not going to recoup anywhere near the money that they paid for him. And I'm a little bit worried about where he's at next season.
Me too. Because of that goal record, a huge club will be hesitant. And he actually needs a big club, a ball-dominant club, will get involved in build-up play. Because if he ends up feeding off scraps, I mean, look, if Rasmus Højlund, a player of that quality, can be reduced to chasing down all those various avenues without possession, what's going to happen to João Félix?
I just wonder whether he may need like a position shift.
Yeah, maybe, you know? Maybe.
Kind of in a Havertz.
Go to Arsenal.
Style. Well, I think.
No, I'm being
I think stylistically he could, weirdly, I think he could work there.
But it's a confidence thing. It's confidence.
But it's a big gamble. And I think you can see he's like quite prickly. There's seemingly such a harmony among that squad that I just don't think Arteta would want to make a move for. They seem to really put like a focus on like characters.
Yes.
I think. Like especially in the last couple of years that they signed. Yeah, I just don't think he's the kind of player. But anyway, let's go back to the game, because we just ended up talking about João Félix.
Yes,
it was a great goal. It was a good goal. Yeah. Lovely finish. We talked about Fermín López's header, followed by an awful knee slide. It looked quite painful. He went to slide and the Metropolitano turf was not wet enough for a smooth knee slide. So he just did
absolutely
the boing, boing. And I was just like, that's got to hurt. I think I'm over knee slides, man. I think I've been over them for a while. But
dude, they're so dangerous.
Yeah, I remember when people first started doing it and everyone was just like,
how many injuries must they need? I mean, the club doctors and the insurers must just look at them and be like, what the hell are you doing? Your knees, your actual knees. I don't.
Yeah, I'm over it. Like,
yeah,
knee slides are over. It's like, when people just dabbed a little bit too long.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Well, that American when the Republican politician dabbed and killed the dab, I thought actually he did the world a favor, actually.
you should only dab ironically now.
And that's right.
Like, for example, I would take ironic knee slides. If you score a goal for your team and it's a consolation goal and you're already 5-0 down, I will accept a knee slide.
Yes, that's fair. That's fair.
No meaningful goals need knee slides anymore. They just don't. Only meaningless goals are allowed knee slides.
That's your decree.
Yeah.
The papal decree. Yeah.
Yeah. We missed Lewandowski's goal. We talked about it earlier, but Lewandowski with a great kind of rolling back the years finish.
Yeah. Old school.
Atleti were just... They were just kind of done, man.
Really
they were
poor,
like
really poor.
And this is a Barcelona side missing a lot of players as well.
Can I say shout again to the 17-year-olds in that defense, Port and Kubasi. Kubasi again, excellent. I mean,
wow.
The irony that Xavi is finally working out how to coach this Barca team on his way out.
Speaking of Xavi, off he went just before half time.
Yes, he did. He was on a journey. So two yellows, wasn't it? Very quickly, very successful.
There was an amazing thing after the game as well, where he was doing an interview on DAZN, and Koke comes past, and he's just like, Cabron. He's like, you never stop running. You never stop running. Good respect there, because I think that's the last time they're going to play, right?
I'd love the Koke documentary. Love to see that.
Oh, Koke's sick, man.
When that's ready, like, when that's ready, yeah. This is, it's like, his surname is like Resurrection. I mean... Wow.
Very quick shouts for some Bundesliga. What do you want to do? Oh, sorry. Any other thing in La Liga? I mean, Girona lost to Getafe, which was a massive
Getafe role. Beating Girona. I was going to make, that's the last. The only thing to mention was really that. No other results really standing out, but the Getafe win over Girona, the 1-0 win. That was big
Barca goes second.
Real beat Osasuna 4-2 away.
Yeah.
People were talking the things to Vinicius because he had a lot to say when he celebrated his second goal. Got a gorgeous first. Bram Diaz with a great burst of speed down the middle for another Real goal. And, you know, Real Madrid actually going to need to get in the habit of finding the net, because that tie against City, it will come down to chance creation, the two legs. And good to see them flowing. Good to see Vinicius in the groove. That's going to be a hell of a matchup. So, yeah, good win for Madrid given Girona's defeat.
Yeah, and the Athletic and Club, shouts to them, beating Alaves 2-0. And they go into they've overtaken Atleti now, and they're in the Champions League spots. And there's a huge game when La Liga returns after the international break in the Bernabeu, Real Madrid against Athletic Club.
Hook that to the veins.
I cannot wait for that. That's going to be the day Valverde. After. That's going to be Easter Valverde. Sunday as well.
Valverde preparing his red card.
Which one, Ernesto or Fede?
Fede, when am I going to bring someone down on the counter-attack? Yeah, we'll see, But yes, that's La Liga. That's all the action there. Bundesliga, I want to shout out quickly before we go. I want to just mention Freiburg's win. So Leverkusen's win over Freiburg. 3-1 away. Florian Wirtz just doing things.
His goal was so good.
He's crushing it.
Yeah.
He's absolutely crushing it. Delightful. Actually, on Leverkusen, we were honoured to be asked to talk to NPR about Leverkusen's progress. So we had a chat with them about the amazing work. Oh, the royal we.
We did a
short segment with them, with a German correspondent for NPR, about Leverkusen's brilliant form and the way that Xabi Alonso's got them playing with so much freedom. So if you want to listen to that, please. It's on All Things Considered. So for those NPR listeners among us, please check that out.
Bayern beating Darmstadt 5-2.
Yeah. But Darmstadt poked the bear, didn't they?
They scored first. The goal before the thrashing. I want to shout out Stuttgart, because Stuttgart are looking really, really good. They beat Hoffenheim 3-0. And Dortmund came from a goal behind to beat Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, the opening goal, the Frankfurt goal from Götze.
I know. But that was a good win for Dortmund, because Leipzig had beaten Köln 5-1 on Friday night to go into the Champions League spots. Xabi Simons with another lovely goal and great performance.
He's had a great
game. Good response from Dortmund. Win for Union against Werder Bremen.
They're pulling towards safety, Union, aren't they? They're going to be safe.
Yeah,
I think.
They're going to be fine. I think they've got a 9-point gap on the Relegation playoff, which was Mainz, who, even though Mainz beat Bochum on the weekend, which was a massive win for them. But yeah, Werder Bremen, after kind of flying very, very high, like drawn, won, and lost their last three in a row. So, but I reckon we'll leave it there for today, huh?
Yeah, I think we will.
Don't forget to check Counterpressed for all your WSL and NWSL stuff from the weekend. Go check Wright's House tomorrow with Florence and Musa. No Stadio on Thursday. We'll be back next Monday. But don't forget to check the Stadio Outros players on Spotify. And speaking of which, we're playing out on Coast to Coast. Love is the Same. Anything you'd like to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further, only that when you listen to this song, please imagine it accompanying Amad Diallo as he walks off the field and down the tunnel. That's how I felt when I heard it. Yeah,
it's a good job it's the men's international break, because I think it's going to take Musa a while to recover from the weekend, because it was a bit too much, I think.
Listen.
Too much for him.
I'm going to walk out the door high-fiving strangers. They'll be like, what's he doing? Like, I was like, no, trust me, this context.
Like Ebenezer Scrooge on Christmas Day.
Yes.
You boy, what day is it? Well, sir, it's the day after Amad Diallo got sent off for scoring the winner.
Here's
a bag of coins. Go buy the biggest bag of cupcakes you have ever seen, dear boy. Bring them to me. Anyway, all right, everyone. Much love. Have a great week, and we'll be back with you next Monday.
See you then.
You can go to Paris, London. Love is the same.